Hello, my friends. My goodness, can you believe how steadily we are moving to the end of the year? It's that time of year where we can feel pulled by the forces of family, season, and consumerism. I want you to remember to come back to you. Check in with yourself throughout the season with a pause, a breath, a word of self-compassion, a word of kindness. And there are a couple of special things I have planned to support you. First of all, for all my yoga teachers out there, I am leading a trauma-informed yoga teacher training this January 24th and 25th. It is so easy to traumatize or re-traumatize a practitioner in yoga spaces. In this training, you'll discover what it means to recognize and support trauma survivors in yoga studios and to bring yoga teaching off the mat. The info is on my website, laraland.us, under consulting, and of course, we'll have it in the show notes. And second, but certainly not least, I am doing very, very special episode on this podcast on December 22nd. I will be leading an alignment and manifestation workshop based on my life purpose journal and year-long coaching program, My Bliss Book. So purchase your copy of My Bliss Book in advance so you can do all the meditations and visualizations along with me, get past your blocks, out of your way, and start manifesting the life of your dreams in 2026. And that is also linked in the show notes and available on my website. I am so excited to bring this offering to you and to see what you cook up for the new year. Hi, I'm Lara Land, an integrative clinical mental health counselor, author of My Bliss Book and The Essential Guide to Trauma-Sensitive Yoga, and Trauma Sensitivity Consultant. And this is the Beyond Trauma podcast. Here we explore healing, growth, and what it means to truly thrive. You'll hear from therapists of different approaches, wellness coaches, and people with lived experience who talk about how to build resilience and connection, shift habitual responses, and live in your values. Your time is valuable to me. My goal is for you to walk away from each episode with an insight or practice you can put into action to build more ease and clarity in your life. Here we go. Beyond Trauma listeners, did you know you can always start over? Giving myself permission to begin again at any moment has allowed me to constantly evolve, and it's a tool I use with all of my coaching clients. It's also the premise of my first book, My Bliss Book. My Bliss Book is an undated life purpose planner that comes with an automated coaching program sent directly to your inbox biweekly when you enroll using the secret URL found inside the book. You will receive my creative visualization meditation, encouraging you to move beyond social programming and self-imposed limitations and into visualizing your truest, most honest vision for your own unique life. Then using my Bliss Book, you will work backwards to develop actionable steps to meet goals throughout the year that take you towards your big vision. Have a habit of buying pretty planners and putting them down before they're finished? Not a problem. My bi-weekly emails provide just the nudge needed to pick up your planner again. And if you miss a few days, you don't waste your book. The book is undated, so you can always start again. My Bliss Book is available off my site, laraland.us, and is now 20% off for my podcast listeners with code STARTAGAIN. But hurry, this discount won't run forever. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Beyond Trauma podcast. This is very exciting. We have a part one and part two episode / podcast swap for you all today. So after you listen to this episode on Thursday for Thanksgiving, you're going to go over to the podcast. Don't mind me. I just have ADHD with Ron Sowers. Don't mind me. I just have ADHD. Go ahead and subscribe to that now. And then Thursday, you're going to hear the episode drop with Ron interviewing me. So we do a little bit of a flip-flop, and we do comment on each other's episodes and the previous conversation. We recorded these back-to-back on the same day. So it's kind of like one continuous conversation. So listen to this one now, and Thursday, go over to Don't Mind Me, I Just Have ADHD with Ron Sowers. I have Ron on today. We're going to be talking about ADHD, which we've never spoken about here on the Beyond Trauma podcast. Ron is the author of two books. He specializes in helping adults, especially men over 40, break through social barriers caused by ADHD, addiction, and depression. He coaches from lived experience, guiding neurodivergent minds to reconnect with purpose, confidence, and the relationships that make life worth showing up for. We talk about ADHD, but we also talk about how folks who are not neurodivergent can support those who have ADHD in their lives. We talk a lot about mindfulness, great tricks for all of us for self-acceptance, focusing the mind, remembering to do our practices. There's a lot in here, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you and hearing what you think. So make sure, as always, that you go over and give us a rating and review, especially on iTunes, so that other people can find this episode. Thank you so much, and here we go. Ron Sowers, welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor to be a guest on your show.
Yeah, it's really cool to collaborate with you and have you here and talk about, first of all, let's tell people this is part of a two-part conversation. So we're really doing a collaboration. This is something different. And we're going to be sending people over to your podcast to hear the other half. And we'll talk more about that. So we're here today to talk about ADHD, which we've never talked about on the show. And I'm really thrilled to bring this into the conversation because it's a diagnosis that many people have, or many people suspect they have as well. So can you talk to us a little bit about what is ADHD and why it's important to you to talk about this topic?
Well, so yeah, and I'm by no means like an authority on what ADHD is. And, you know, I feel like we're still trying to figure it out as a human race. But from my perspective, and what I've learned is like ADHD is, it stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And there's two, well, actually there's three manifestations of it. So one is the inattentive, and that shows up as somebody who you talk to them and they may not seem to respond, or they're very like, very slow to react, and you know, they seem to be more up in their head, and it could manifest in different ways that, you know, you may think that that person really doesn't care, but it's just, it takes them a little bit to catch up. And the other end is like the more hyperactive, and that shows up as impulsivity. You often see that in little boys running around, and they fidget, they can't sit still. It also can show up as people interrupting. And that comes from my experiences. Like I have something in my head and I want to get it out before I forget it. It really manifests differently in adults and children. So the thoughts, and in women and men as well. So the thoughts like are more the hyperactive. So like my thoughts can go up to 100, 200 miles an hour. For most people, it's like, that's a crazy amount of activity. And there's also this combined. So, and I feel like I fit in both in that category right there. So it's almost like a menu of options that you can choose from. And each person is different. So it's, yeah, it definitely shows up a lot with emotional dysregulation. And that can be, those littlest thing can set me off. You know, I'm feeling happy one moment and then somebody says something or something, you know, even the breeze blows and I think of something else and my mood is totally different. I become a different person. And it's not necessarily like bipolar. It's more of like my reactions are just overblown to any particular emotions. And I feel like it all boils down to being, most neurodivergent people in general are very sensitive people. And that's how our brains developed. And that's why we feel things to a higher degree.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, with all those thoughts going around in your mind so quickly, you're trying to keep it all together. You're trying to follow the train. And if something, you know, it's holding on kind of by a thread, a smaller amount. And so it's more easily tripped up.
Yeah. No, it's harder to, and following that train is like impossible. So that's why it's like we're easy. It's not a deficit of attention. It's actually an overwhelming amount of attention. Like we see everything, we feel everything to the next degree, and it can be very hard to focus.
And you mentioned that some of the ways that can show up is extra emotional, switch in moods, and sometimes you might interrupt someone and, you know, they think you're being rude, but you're really just, you know, that thought could be gone so quickly.
Yeah. And if I don't like write it down or get it out, like it needs to be said. Like it's so important, even though it may or may not be.
Yeah.
We believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. In your mind it is. And so it's important to you. When was it that you started to notice some of these things in yourself, or maybe that you were different, or did other people notice that?
I mean, I think that it was a lifelong thing, but I just really wasn't aware that it was like an actual issue. I thought I was like normal, or, you know, I was under the impression that, you know, like most people, that this was something you grew out of. And, you know, lo and behold, I'm running around. Like people were telling me I need to slow down. And I was just like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. I need to catch up for lost time. And there's so many things I need to do right now. And like, I don't have enough time to do them. So I'm rushing through everything. And that became an issue at my job. And I ended up hurting myself, damaging company property. And it got to the point where I was about to get fired. And I, at that point, I was like, maybe I need to listen and take this seriously, because, you know, I had a fear. And so I went to my primary care and asked her, you know, told her I can't slow down. I'm desperate. These are the things that are happening at my job and I don't want to lose it. And she kind of like didn't know what to think about all of it. And, you know, I told her maybe I have ADHD. And she was kind of like, you know, a little unsure, but she gave me a list of, you know, therapists and psychologists that I could call. And I ended up, you know, finding the therapist that I actually still see today. And one of the first things that he told me was that, you know, that made an impression, was that you're not broken. This can actually be used as a strength. And I just did not even see how that was possible at that moment.
That's so beautiful and so important, because a lot of young people who have ADHD are told there's something wrong with you and they're not behaving right, because the traditional school system that we have, sit down in the chair, and it's all based on that control and keeping things tight. And when someone who has ADHD, they can't function like that. They're told they're bad. They're dumb sometimes. They can be very, very smart, but they get that message that you're not good enough because they don't conform to the kind of norms of the school system. And a lot of young people, especially, I know, internalize that message. Later on, they have self-esteem, anger issues, and so on, because they didn't get the right messaging and help. And just get put in the right environment. So it's great. It sounds like it happened later, but it's great that you found someone that can see you and see your strengths.
Yeah. And you touched on a lot of important things, you know, about the school system, conformity, and the right environment. And that's 100% like what is necessary for people to grow and be in self-advocation. There are so many successful people that have ADHD that don't talk about it, don't use the platform that they're on. And it could really help with these young people with ADHD to really see themselves as like, well, if he can do, he can be successful, because you're told you're a failure. You're told you're broken. You're told you're lazy, or you're told all these things so many times throughout your life. And I know for me, like I started to internalize that and tell myself those things. So once that happens, it's very hard to like break free from that pattern. Even years of work, you know, that I've been doing on myself with personal development, it's still those voices are still there, that negative thought process. And it's there because it wanted to protect me. And that, there's where the adaptations come in. So you see a lot of masking and things like that in individuals, which leads to more burnout because you're trying to do the same job and you're trying to conform and you're having to do it with this, all this extra energy spent in this mask. And so a normal day for somebody that's neurodivergent is so full of stress, you know, of getting caught, of like having to pretend to be somebody and operate in a way that's not natural for them.
Yeah. So you're talking about like going more with the flow of it, like owning it and understanding it.
Yeah.
If you can kind of harness the way your brain works and use it to your advantage rather than try to fight it or hide it.
Yeah, like understand your limitations. Like I understand that I get distracted very easily. It's you know, if out of sight, out of mind is totally accurate, you know. So if I'm doing a project or I'm on a task, I want to complete that task before I move on or go somewhere else, because like the odds are when I come back to it, I'm not going to remember where I was at unless I stop at a point that I know that I'll remember. Or if that's not possible, I need to write down a note or put something somewhere where it can remind me. So understanding those limitations actually strengthens what, you know, I'm specialized at. And that's another thing that isn't talked about enough is, you know, many people, neurodivergence period, have amazing strengths that other people don't have. Like we're amazing. We have an incredible amount of creativity, and creativity doesn't just mean like you're artistic or you're an actor or you're an entertainer or whatever. It means like, hey, it could be a creative solution to something, or you come up with a different way of doing the same thing that actually is optimized for you or optimized for somebody else. So creativity is huge when it comes to like businesses trying to come up with innovation and being able to think outside the box, being able to see things in a way that normal people don't see them. And you can have all these elements working together in tandem, but you got to understand, like, you know, on a personal level, like what these people are actually, where their problems are, where their like sticking points, so that you can be like, well, maybe we can address that or get that person in the conversation to problem solve.
Yeah, I love that. You're going to see a lot of things that people that are kind of quote unquote normal or conforming aren't going to see, which is a major advantage, because, you know, they say you can't solve the problem using the same mentality that got you into the problem. So you need someone with a different mindset for new solutions.
Yeah, definitely. And the whole idea of conformity is like such a broken and weak system, you know, when we're all conforming to this system that's continuing to fail us, you know, especially like you talked about the school system sitting in chairs. It's like, we're kids. Even if you don't have ADHD, there's this whole propensity to like want to run around. Like we learn better when we're moving, when we have movement involved in that learning process, and you're shutting down and eliminating that part. So you're automatically behind where you could have been. And then that whole creativity is stifled. So from an early age, you're taught that that's not something you need to do. You need to do this way, and this is the only way to do it. And it limits your ability to ask the right questions, you know, because you don't think you can ask questions.
Oh, yeah, a lot there. But it's very true that we learn more and better when there's movement attached, which a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
Interacting with the environment.
Yeah, and creating those environments, you know, and I believe that it's not just going to benefit neurodivergent people. It'll benefit everyone because it's much more like, who really wants to sit in a desk that's hard and you've got every, you know, in one place for 8 hours? Like, you look at even people with office jobs, it's like a lot of them have back issues or health problems because they're sitting all day long and there's not movements, there are not breaks, there's not these other activities that your brain only can go for so long before it stops being as productive as it could be. It needs those type of breaks.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, people say they go for a walk and this happens to me and their greatest ideas come. So yeah, it's connected to movement. It's connecting to, there's time for that, like really funneled down focused work. And then there's time for like widening and broadening and opening out.
Yeah.
And definitely. If we only give value to that really hunkered down, like really tight focus, we're so limiting ourselves.
Yeah, and we're leaving a lot on the table and wondering what's the holdup, you know, when we're not really analyzing the situation. And that whole like walking in nature, you know, is so, being near water, being out in nature is so therapeutic. I do that every morning before I get up. I mean, not before, but after I get up. And like, I go out and, you know, I do a mindfulness walk that includes connecting with nature. So it's actually like touching trees and leaves and feeling that connection. And sometimes I'll try, if I can remember, I'll try to do that when I'm walking, you know, down the street. Like, there's trees there that are just been taken for granted. And we just pass by them every day, but without them, we can't live.
Is that something that you added? That's beautiful, by the way. I'm wondering if it was a practice that came after your diagnosis. Is that part of how you take care of yourself?
Yeah. And it's like this whole mindfulness practice is huge for what I do. Not only like do I do for myself, but I also teach and help clients with. So it's about understanding like that space. Because when I first learned about mindfulness, it was when I got an ADHD coach. And I was like, I was dealing with a lot of anxiety because I was trying to build my business. And there was like, I was getting anxiety about everything that I had to do for normal life that kind of took away from my time to work on what I needed to do for my business, like cooking and cleaning and doing laundry. Like, I was like, man, I don't have time for that. And she was like, try mindfulness. So it's like, it's this practice of being in the moment, appreciating the moment, especially when I'm going out for like my mindful walk in the morning, which I actually started doing before that, because it was like, I was starting to, you know, try to develop like routines that other people, morning routines that other people had done that were successful. So I was like, I was able to incorporate mindfulness into that, because mindfulness it can be meditation, but it can also be movement based. You can practice it virtually anywhere in the world, anytime, at any place, with mindful listening. And with that mindful walk, it's like out there, I'm listening to the birds. I'm not thinking about what I have to do. I'm not thinking about what I didn't do, or at least doing my best to come back to this is the present moment, and I have everything I need right now with me. And to be in the present moment is hard for a lot of people, especially people with ADHD, because our thoughts are going so fast that, you know, when you start to slow those thoughts down, it gives you that pause, that space to think about things, to actually observe, you know, and what am I doing here? Is this really helping me, you know, as a person? Like, because we're just going, and we, you know, doing these adaptations, and until we start to like really be introduced, like, character strengths in there, which is like that curiosity of like, why am I thinking these thoughts? Well, you know, allowing those thoughts to just come and go, you know, without being attached to like, and that can be difficult in the beginning and further along in the practice, because it's like you get attached to this notion of like, it's important, and it is, but it's like, it's also important for you to not get burnt out pursuing that, because it'll happen in its time.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of good things there. I think the senses, you know, you're using the senses very much to ground you in the present moment. And that's something that we all have. We can pick one sense that's strong for us, just noticing the feeling of the air, the temperature, or sound. And that can bring you right away back to the present moment. And the other thing you said that I've been using for years is this helping. That's such a good one. It's just to like, yeah, it seems important. Yeah, I'm doing all these things. Feels like I'm doing so much. And we can get this sense that like, oh, I'm doing a lot. It's almost like you get a little high on it, but then you kind of sit back for a second and say like, is all this really helping? You know, or is there something else I could do? Is there one thought I could focus on? And just asking that question kind of opens it up.
Yeah, for me, it comes back to that, you know, that thought of like, am I being the example that I want to be to my clients? Like, am I going to be able to show up for the people in my life the best way if I'm running around in this, you know, am I really showing that I'm grateful for the things that I have? If I'm constantly worrying about, am I doing enough? Am I pushing hard enough? And it's not enjoying the moment. And it with the senses, it's coming back to your body. We don't like spend enough time in our body. It's like there's this disconnect between your mind and your body. And it's like your body's there. Like if it starts to break down, your mind's not gonna be able to do much.
Right. You know, if you're letting all those thoughts rule, you're not here in your body. So you're talking about starting your day with really dropping into the body. You mentioned letting the thoughts that aren't necessary or, you know, pass and coming back to what am I feeling? What's happening right here and now in my body? And then you can choose, you know, if you want to concentrate on a thought, if you want to bring in a thought, but you have a choice then in that moment that you didn't have when it was all running away.
Yeah, it's about that balance.
Yeah.
And creating that balance of, you know, it's never going to be, no one's ever perfectly mind. There's no such thing. And being perfect is like, it's not human. It's not something that, you know, like there's a degree. And that's also a struggle for people with ADHD. We want to get it perfect because we're so afraid of that people judging us and telling us and it's proving that we're broken again. And like, we've got to get this perfect. So when you have the weight of that, that actually limits your creativity. That limits a lot of things, and you end up lacking the motivation and to do things, because perfectionism doesn't mean you get everything perfect. It's more about, I won't do things because I don't think I can get it perfect.
Right.
So that's where the procrastination comes in. You know, it's like, it's this heavy burden of like having to get things right every single time. And that it's not normal. It's not a normal thing for humans to do. I've learned the biggest lessons from the mistakes that I've made, and allowing myself the freedom to make those mistakes is very important.
Yeah, you mentioned that's such a good point, you know, because you talked a lot about the striving, and the other end of that is the giving up, like the defeatism, or like the not trying, the putting things off because it's not going to work anyway. And so it's kind of like when the body goes into like that hyper or hypo, and it's kind of like swinging between like all or nothing. And it sounds like you're what you work on and what you help people with is to kind of find that middle ground. And it's, you know, we're always going to fluctuate. We're even in being in the middle, we're not going to be perfect, but we're kind of helping the nervous system to not swing so drastically, which is exhausting for the body.
Yeah, definitely. And it's about being imperfect. You know, it's about embracing that like I make mistakes, it's okay, or I'm, you know, whatever I'm feeling, like it's okay to feel that feeling. Like a lot of times we want to push down those feelings or distract ourselves from feeling anything that's not happy or good or whatever, like especially like admitting when I'm afraid or admitting when I'm depressed.
These are really big steps. I'm wondering, I mean, like even for a neurotypical person, you know, a lot of people say to me, like, just how do I get in the habit of like going for that walk every day? Like, and can you give us some kind of like tips and tricks that you've used? Like, you know, I like how you mentioned before, I have to really finish because if I get distracted, there's a good chance I won't finish or I won't remember where I was. If I can't finish a project, I have to really write down where I was so I know how to come back to it. Like, what are some of those kind of like tricks and tactics that you use to keep good habits in your life? I know everyone's wanting to know, like, yeah, I should be mindful, but I always forget to be mindful.
What are your secrets?
Yeah, tell us all your secrets.
No. yeah, you know, honestly, the thing is that's really helped me is when I don't do the practice, you know, and I see the results of doing it. And, you know, then I'm like more motivated to do it. And I don't beat myself up, you know, at least I've gotten better at not beating myself up for when, you know, it's like those things happen. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you got to rearrange it, but understanding like, it's more about looking at what you did do and what it does for you. So it's like, you know, it's one thing, like they talked about imagining your future self. So what would future Ron say, think if I ate all the cookies in the cookie jar last night? You know, how is future Ron going to feel? And how is future Ron going to talk about that? And just appreciating what you'll be like in the future, just looking at the outcome of like, okay, yeah, it's going to be hard right now, but once I get through this, I'm going to be happy.
You have to be able to pause to do that. And that's where I guess the mindfulness really comes in, because some people don't, like, they're already finished the box of cookies. The impulse, you know, is so strong. So that the mindfulness, I think, is really what creates the space to be able to even ask that question of how am I going to feel later?
And like, if you're just beginning, just start out slow, you know, and start out with little, whatever you can do. If it's 30 seconds, it's great. You know, if you forget, okay, well, you can come back to it, you know, and setting up sticky notes or like stickers or different reminders or maybe an alarm. Like I have a bunch of like mindfulness alarms, you know, throughout the day, you know, that tell me, okay, this is a reminder to do this. This is a reminder to slow down. You know, sometimes it's just like you want to build it into your routine. So it's like stacked on. Like say you have a break instead of, you know, getting on your phone and scrolling right away. Not that you don't have to do that, but it's just like take a mindful pause, you know, do a breathing exercise, like short 30-second breathing exercise, and then get on your phone, you know, and then try to get a little bit more. See how that works. See how that lands. And then if you like it, try more, try learning, you know, and switch it up. Don't do the same thing every single day, you know, because like that can be, I mean, you can do it at the same time, but like maybe try a different type of meditation or try a different, you know, if you walk one way, walk the other way or find a new path, you know, so it's not like the same thing. Or pay attention to a different thing or add on a mindfulness thing on your walk. There's a lot of different variations. And, you know, I believe that's really helpful too for people with ADHD, because like we get bored with the same thing over and over again. We want something that our mind needs to be given things to do. And creating a little bit of variation in that really helps to for a prolonged practice.
That's major. That's major. Yeah. You're really capturing some important things there with the combination of the need for structure and pattern to remember to do the thing. But within the thing, there's so many different mindfulness practices. There's walking meditations, there's breathing meditations. You know, we can meditate on our thoughts, we can meditate on our future self, we can meditate on a word, we can use sound, like we can simply walk a different route. So there's just endless variations. It's not about doing the same variations, it's about doing something. And that might free it up enough for you to keep doing it. Whereas if you limit yourself to, I have to do this one by this teacher, like, you know, you're going to start to feel really confined. And then you might say, this whole thing doesn't work for me, and just forget it anyway.
Yeah. And the whole thing is like changing that, like that one word, have, like, I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I get to do it.
Yeah.
Makes a whole difference.
To have the time and the energy and to have a brain and a body where we can do these things is such a gift.
Yeah, because mindfulness is actually like when you get it and you actually do it, it's a gift. Not everybody does it. Not everybody has experience. It's like a world within a world, because you get to see things. Like the present moment used to have no meaning to me. It was like, who wants to be in that moment? But now it's like, wow, there's so much connection. There's so much going on in this moment. And what really like helped me was like understanding that if I can't enjoy this moment, what makes me think that I can enjoy any other moment?
Yes. Like we're always fighting for this future, but you never experience the future. You're always looking for the next moment.
Yeah, there's very few. It's a life that has little happiness to it. You know, I've had more happiness than, yeah, of course I get sad. Of course I get angry. And of course I'm not happy with, and I'm frustrated with certain things. But it's always like when those moments happen, like I understand, like, well, maybe my practice, I need to sit in my practice and I need to return to some of the things that I was doing. You know, because it's not about that perfect. It's not supposed to be like you have to do these things. It's like these things that are suggested and this what could happen, but it's like come to it at your own time.
And the other thing you said that I wanted to highlight is taking in the feeling. And this is something that I encourage a lot with my students and all the folks I work with. At the end of a yoga class, I always encourage folks, take in the feeling of how you feel having done this, because your body will remember that it wants to do it more. That's what you said for both. Just notice how you feel the days you don't do it. Notice how you feel the days you do it. You know, you notice on your own.
Yeah, definitely. It's those times I slip up that like, or, you know, that I make, you know, I'm human, that make that practice more valuable. That I'm like, okay, I don't want to feel this way. Like I like to feel the way that I feel when I do it, you know, and even now, like there will be times where my body's like buzzing and there's like a lot of thoughts going around and, you know, I'm trying to sit and meditate and, you know, listen to a guided meditation, which I do different ones. One's called the Healthy Minds program, and there's an app for that, and you know it takes you on a path of mindfulness through with a little bit of character strengths involved, but they don't really talk about it a lot, but they're in there, and it's really just, you know, it's like lessons and mindfulness practice. And even in those times, there's sometimes my brain's just got to be okay with where it's at. Like it's not always going to be zen, it's not always going to be this state of peace. But it's about being aware of that and open to, okay, this is where I'm at now. And just trying to give yourself a little space in that moment. Because I believe in those days, you really do need it the most, because life shows up and, you know, especially at work. If I don't have this transition between what I'm doing for my business and then going into my actual job, like it's like this whole, all this energy that's running around in my body that I'm like, it's going to interact with the energy from other people. And whatever, if that's negative, that could end up being a situation where, you know, I don't show up where the way I would like to.
So true. It's so true. Transitions are major. And in just, it could be literally, it could be like 30 seconds, but doing something between so you don't take work into home or entrepreneurship into, you know, a kind of a 9-to-5, like just something that we do. I do like brushing off the skin, shaking out, just knowing I'm putting this down. You can even mime it, like, I'm going to put this thing down, you know, and I'm walking into the next. Or one exercise I do with a lot of folks is just because we open doors so much throughout the day, corridor, in and out of office, is, and it's good to, because it's hard to remember to be mindful and it's hard to remember these rituals. It's like every time you touch the door, that's, you just note that, you take a breath, you feel your feet on the ground, and you recognize that I'm stepping in from one place to a new place. And it just touching the door, it kind of like, I release what's in this room and I come into the next room.
That's cool. I like that. And I kind of have something similar where I have these stickers all over, you know, like on my house, like actually at work too. And like, you know, one's like, let's celebrate something today. You know, and I'm always like, you know, and I'll say that to other people, like, what is there to celebrate? I'm like, life. Just the fact that you got up today, the fact that you have a job, being appreciating the things that you have that we take for granted. Like I talked about the trees, the birds. The birds are just like, I try to feed the birds. You know, I got this new feeder and they just like, they just eat that. Like it's gone in 2 or 3 days. I'm like,
I love that. And I love the sticky notes and reminders. And, you know, we all need that. It's not, none of us who are practicing this stuff are like remembering it all the time. We all need reminders. We talked about a lot of tips for people, different tricks. Anything else that you want to say about maybe for folks who are not neurodivergent, how they could be more supportive, understanding of their friends, coworkers, and so forth? Anything or anything else that you want to share for advocacy, for just more understanding in the world?
Yeah, it's just having some acceptance, you know, with who you are, and that there's nothing wrong with that. Like you have strengths. Every one of us has strengths, and some strengths that are defining about who we are as characters, you know, and a lot of us deal with that strengths blindness. Like we don't really look at those things because we think it's egotistical. But when you focus on those, like curiosity, or, you know, which is huge, and love of learning or forgiveness, you know, those things can really change your perspective, especially when you can start to see them in other people. Because like even those people that are challenging to you or you find annoying have things about them that are good. You just got to look for them. And when you start to see those good things, that you can become more forgiving or accepting of those people. But it really actually has to start first with you, is accepting that you do make mistakes, that you are human, and that's okay. And whatever you're feeling is actually a good thing because it's telling you something. You just gotta accept it in order to actually be able to hear what it's telling you.
Ah, so love it. So heartwarming. That self-acceptance is major. And you're right, it starts with ourselves.
Yeah, it's hard. It's the hardest steps to make. It sounds so easy. And acceptance doesn't mean you gotta like it. It just means that you accept it, good or bad. It is what it is, and there's nothing I can do to change it. And I'm gonna move on with trying to change it, or trying to do something to make it not so. The only person that I can ever change is me, and that's hard enough.
Yeah. Are there things that we can do as friends, family, or coworkers or bosses of folks who have ADHD to make the environment more pleasant, productive, helpful?
Yeah, just giving them the space to be vulnerable, just, you know, kind of asking them questions about, like, you know, how's your day going? How is it really going? Like, you know, and being vulnerable yourself, like telling them things, you know, like, I'm just not feeling it today, or, you know, this thing, you know, if there's a new policy and, you know, they know people don't like it, you know, be like, address the elephant in the room, be like, man, yeah, I know it's tough. It's something that I didn't personally want to happen, but, you know, unfortunately I have a boss too, and got to listen, and give me some ways that, you know, like, I can help you with that.
More transparency, more vulnerability.
Yeah. And trying to be the boss that you always wanted, instead of being like, well, this was always, you know, this was the way it was for me. So it's gotta be did you like it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, be human. Yeah.
Just seeing other people is like, they've got families, they've got issues, they want to be happy too. You know, and treating them like people that you care about what's going on. Showing that empathy and that care goes such a long way.
Well, Ron, this has been awesome. Let people know how they can work with you, and tell them where they can listen to you and where they should come over to listen to us.
Yeah, definitely. You can always find me on my podcast. It's called Don't Mind Me, I Just Have ADHD. And, you know, it's got a lot of good tips on how to navigate the workplace and, you know, life in general with ADHD. Yeah, I'm also giving your guest a free gift. It's my self-discovery journal. It's got a lot of great prompts in order to really explore that emotional trauma that we all carry on a deeper loving level. And you know, I'm also offering a five, you know, I'm it's a new thing. It's five, it's called the Connection Blueprint, and it's a 5 one-on-one coaching sessions with me to help with, you know, those guys that are 40 and over that have ADHD, depression, or struggle with addiction, to break through that isolation, to become more pro-social, so that they can build deeper, more committed relationships, reclaim their confidence, and finally feel seen and supported. It's about unlocking the version of you that's always been there. And you can find that, both that gift and the coaching, at youradhdguy.com.
Great. And we'll link that all in the show notes.
Thank you.
I'm going to encourage people to come on over to your podcast, where we're going to continue this conversation.
Yeah, come on over and hear part two.
We're going to flip the roles, and Ron's going to interview me. So make sure you're following both of us. And I can't wait to see where this goes when we do our little flip.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks so much, Ron.
As we buzz around the busy world, it becomes clear there are billions of paths. As we buzz around the busy world, we will appear in other people's photographs. As we speed through the centuries, we will collide and the light will bend. We will be accidentally immortalized in someone else's land.